Hi, you are listening to the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. This podcast is for policymakers, governments, researchers, students, businesses, and anyone that is interested in conflict and development issues in Africa. On this podcast, we hear from experts from across Africa and the world. Your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa, will ask the questions you would want answers to. Michael Wangpa has an extensive experience spanning over a decade studying, researching, writing, and consulting on conflict and development issues in Africa.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Conflict and Development in Africa podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Michael Wangpa. Today, we are going to be discussing Gabon's military regime and its transition to democracy. I'm joined by a very special guest, Dr. Steve Tametong. Dr. Steve is a senior lecturer at the Advanced Institute of Management based in Cameroon. He's also a member of the African Security Sector Network, a think tank that is based in Ghana. He is formerly a senior analyst and deputy director of Democracy and Governance Division at the Nkafu Policy Institute of the Dennis and Lenora Foundation. Steve holds a double PhD, basically. He holds a PhD in public law from Shang University and another PhD in governance and regional integration from the Institute of Governance, Humanities, and Social Sciences of the Pan-African University. Steve, I don't know how you got the power and energy to do a PhD, but it is two PhDs. It is a pleasure to have you join me today, and I look forward to talking to you.
Thank you very much, Michael. I'm very glad to be here.
Brilliant. So let's start off. On the 12th of April, there was an election in Gabon. And that is the first election since the military coup that ended the Bongo family dynasty. So, and I know you and I have worked, you and I are currently working on a project where you've talked greenly about the transitional process in Gabon and to see it, you know, reach out to this. What is your, can you provide an overview of this transition process towards democracy, and if that is something that provides a positive signal to other transitional governments or military governments in the continent, like Burkina Faso and all of that?
Thank you very much, Michael. It's very important to note that, first of all, Gabon is in the Central Africa part of the country, of the continent, let's say like that. And it's the first time this country faced a putsch after a series of putsch we faced in West Africa, especially in Mali, Burkina Faso, and Guinea, and also Niger. So Gabon is in Central Africa, and it's the first state, the first time in its history to face those kind of coup d'etat. It should be also noticed that before Gabon, Chad also passed through the same process. I mean, it was very soft there. It was not really a coup d'etat, but normally in analyzing it theoretically, it appeared totally like a coup d'etat. So it was the first time Gabon faced that situation after 56 years of Bongo family ruling the power also. Mm. It was like an exasperation, and the opportunity of the election, the last election, after Bongo father and Ali Bongo the son, the opportunity of the last election give was a moment of expression of exasperation of the population. That should be not very important. That should be not. So that's why that election gave an opportunity to population to express their point of view. And after this election, there was like a tiff. It was like a disruption between the result of the ballot and what the independent organ in charge of election, the result published by independent organ in charge of election. So after at the end of that election, just to remember the sequence before the coup d'etat coming, before the coup d'etat. So after the result was published by the CDE, and Ali Bongo was declared the first after that election. And Albert Ondossa, the opponent, the principal leader of the opposition, was declared second after that election. And at the same night of the publication of the election, Brice Oligingema, General Brice Oligingema, was the boss, let's say that of the Republican Guard, perpetuated a coup d'état, and that opened the period of transition in Gabon, because it was the end. It marks the end of the Gabon, the Bongos ruling family the power. So, with the coup d'état, the Gabon entered a period of transition, a period of transition during which the military, especially Oligingema, was put at the head of the state as the transitional president. And the different organs and ministry were ruled by the military. So that's the situation in Gabon. So what can be said after that? Should be noted that this coup d'etat happened because of an unfair election organized. It is this the logic of an unfair election organized in that country. And you know, in Central Africa, especially, elections appears like just a moment of joke, because it's like all those head of state had known before the election that they are going to win. So election appear like a joke, or let's say a waste of time and money also. So that happened. It was just in Gabon, the putsch appeared as the result of an unfair election organized, and the military tried to restore, let's say that the sovereignty of the people, because it was a dilemma, let's say like that. It appeared that population vote in favor of Professor Albert Ondossa, the principal leader of the opposition. But the result published by the independent organ give Ali Bongo first after that election. It was a dilemma now, because it's not the first time that's happened in Gabon. Remember in 2016, it was the same situation, the same actor in power, Ali Bongo, but in front of him, it was Jean Ping, the former president of the African Commission Union, who was, like, in 2016, he was some information of some people said that he won election, but that election was stolen by the ruling regime. That's what is said. But officially, that situation created a situation of disorder in that country. So 2024 or 23 was like a remake of that situation. And in front of that dilemma, I think the army decided to protect the sovereignty of the people and give back to the people their sovereignty. That's what I can say in terms of an overview. And if we agree on the cause of the main cause of that coup d'etat, you will look like there is a total difference with what's happened in West Africa, for example. Look, in Gabon, for example, it is in line with an unfair election that the coup d'etat happened. But in West Africa, normally, or Niger, and Burkina Faso, it's appear that terrorism is the main causes at the base of different putsch, because civil power ruling the country give the impression that the terrorism was very high, very important and strong than the army. And the coup d'etat appeared as an exasperation of the army and the population also facing terrorism. That's the official reason given to justify coup d'etat in those area. And that makes a difference with what's happened in Gabon. I think that's one of the elements of difference we can consider when analyzing the different causes and the reason at the base of those different coup d'etat.
Definitely, every case is unique. But from what we see, you've made, there's a lot of angle that we can pursue here. But I think we should start from the angle of military rulers. Is General Brice Oligui Nguema a hero? If you also consider that he was part of the Bongo dynasty, he played a very crucial role. He was the general of the Republican Guard. So what I'm trying to say, in Africa, we've seen military rules. We've seen where military interfere in politics. It used to be the norm in the 80s down to 90s. It's resurfacing now. So do you consider militaries to be a hero in protecting, in protecting the sovereignty of the people? Or do you see the military as another way of just dropping the military clothes and continuing that? Because we see the same thing in Zimbabwe when with the current president was the deputy of Mugabe. And so is it just like the military is perpetuating itself in power? So the question, simple and short, is the military in Gabon a hero?
Thank you very much for that question, Michael. I think it's very complex to answer. It should be noted, it should be said, very important, that putsch or military putsch is an attempt on democracy principle. That should be noted. And that is affirmed in different various instruments, legal instruments, either in Africa, in African Union, or ECAS, or in the constitution of different states. So, because the main channel of devolution of power, we agree on the election as the main channel, as the main way of devolution of power. Because election is at the base of the democracy. That's why we said that, first of all, coup d'etat is an attempt on democracy principle. That's the first thing. Secondly, military should be seen military as hero. I don't really know, but my question is, in case of an election, an unfair election, where the sovereignty of people is stolen, what arms do people have to restore or to complain against that stolen of their sovereignty? I want to take the example of Arab Spring. What's happened there? Remember that the regime of was in Tunisia, Ben Ali, in Algeria, and Egypt also, I think was Al-Sisi, I think. No, Mubarak.
Mubarak.
All those power were pushing out by the population. But what's happened after? What's happened after? It appeared that after the fact, after the population are pushing them out, the power has been conquered again by people coming from that regime. And the same situation happened. And we came back to the same situation criticized at the base of the vindication of population. That's the problem. So the question is, military, can we describe military as heroes? It's very difficult. The fact is that in that situation, population don't have means to go, to go and defend their vote. The only way they have is to go to the street and demonstrate. And after that, what's happened after that? So military appear as the protector, let's say like that. I'm not trying to justify putsch, but I'm just giving a general point of view based on a simple fact that you don't have means to defend your vote. You vote, you go and express your opinion of vote, the vote is stolen. What harm do you have? You don't have it, because it's those ruling the power who have the control on the army. Now, if the army, instead of choosing to kill people in the population, decide to step down those on the power and say it's okay, we are now defending the sovereignty of the people. How that be interpreted? And secondly, there's another important element, is that every time army or people in uniform appear in the political scene, it was like a joy. I don't know if you saw it. In different cases, on different country where coup d'etat happened, the population were hiding as hero. There was applause like hero, because it was like they come to deal to like I don't know, as a pastor who removed a demon from a body of a person. So they appear as hero. They were applause in different street because population feel that we were totally. There were no means for us to defend our vote. Now the army coming is trying to defend our vote. That's the first impression it gave. But the problem with the military regime, that should be said also, the problem with military regime is, what are they doing after with the power? How are they ruling the country after? Are they coming there for their personal interests, or are they coming in power to defend the right of population to have, let's say, a little well-being? That's the question. And on that question, I want to take two examples.
Okay.
One, what's happened in Ghana, for example? When the flying lieutenant, Jerry Rowland, take the power for the second time, he's the father, let's say the father of democracy in Ghana. And everyone has forgotten that Sly Lieutenant came in power with a military push, but he was the one who laid down the foundation of Ghana democracy. That is to say, military sometimes can be have a soul, or can be people through which democracy can be built in the country. And that's why when talking every time about military push, my aim is to say no. Not condemned directly. Military people should be condemned, but let's see what military can be done. And that's why, that's my same position in what is going on in Gabon. Because when you analyze carefully how the transition were ruling, it's appeared totally that the transition was, I think it take place in one year and a half. Normally, it was supposed to take 2 years. Secondly, the military gave some signal of rupture, disruption, total disruption with the military, with the president regime of Ali Bongo. It's true that Oligui Nguema is coming from that same town of Bongo. But let's say there was some signal appreciated by the population. My aim is to say, why should we not give the opportunity to Oligui Nguema to demonstrate what he's capable of in terms of management of power? And let's see if it's a curse that when it's a military power, there is violation of human rights and poverty everywhere. That's my point. It also be mentioned also, the second example is France. It will not appear in the mind of any French person that General de Gaulle was a putschist, but he's the one who built the foundation, of the Fifth Republic. You know? So it's very important also when you are talking about that to be very, not totally.
I get your point. So I guess what you're saying, which what I understand, because with examples you've given, when we look at Ghana is a very good case study you've given, that in some instances, maybe very limited, the military can become vanguards of democracy. They can be midwives of democracy, where they can temporarily to restore where there might be insecurity, maybe from like an unfair or corrupt election practice, they might step in. But now, the you mentioned the Arab Spring. And I think from my own perception, I've always used this is my own what I've coined. It's called the 10-80-10. So the population is 80, and then the elites are 20, but those elites are also divided into 10-10. So the first 10 is the good elites. The other 10 is the bad elites. So in the Arab Spring, when a population revolts, you need the elites to then take over for that thing to transition into something very, very lasting, to organize, that we think the outcome of that revolution, say maybe they've revolted and then it's led to governments bringing they brought governments down. You still need the government to organize things. So so what happens is, if the good elites take over, then it's a good thing, like what happened in Ghana, and they set the stage for that. Yeah. But if the bad elites, in most cases, it will be the same cycle. But now, when we talk about the Gabon case, so let me first start from here. In the Gabon case, does the Gabon case offer hope? Because we, like you rightly said, the disclaimer, we can't normalize military interference in politics. That is not the norm. We can't do that. But does it also stand out as a case study, as a reference for we've seen in Sudan, before the crisis, when was his name now? Omar, the former president was removed, and then the
Bashir.
Yeah, Bashir, when she was in 2020, and then there was a transition, and then they keep stalling. In Nigeria, we've seen it in the 90s when the military come and they keep extending. In Burkina Faso, we see how they've extended the transition to 5 years, but it looks like in Gabon they kept to that timetable, and that is one that should be appreciated. So do you think this provides a reference point for other military regimes in the continent?
I think it should be noted that the case of Gabon coming from a coup d'etat. So let's condemn coup d'etat, first of all. Now, is it an example? I can't say it's an example, because the example is democracy. That's the important thing. The example is democracy. But is the transition of Gabon is an example? I can say yes. Why? Because the transition went very fast. There was like a unanimity on the period of the transition. And different political actors agree on the period of transition and the principles supposed to guide the transition. That's why the transition went to the end with the election of Oligui Nguema. That should be very clear, because if you look carefully what's going on in West Africa, for example, in those countries, it's like we are an impasse, total impasse, because the period of election or the restoration of a civilian power is no more important. In different, for example, in Niger, the military power there and the president of Niger, actually, Tiani, was invested as president for 5 years without going to election. The period, so we are ruling a period of transition, like the period of normal power. You see? But in Gabon, they tried to rule the transition till the organization of election and restoration of the constitutional order. That's very important. So on that point of view, the example of Gabon appear as a good example of a good transition, starting somewhere and finishing by the restoration of a civilian power.
Let me ask you. Okay, go on.
I think there's a question also, because some will say that there was not really a transition or the transition of power to a military, to a civilian regime, because it's the same person.
Exactly.
Oligui Nguema, he was a military, and during the transition, he decided to drop down the uniform and now wear the costume, the suit, let's say it like that. So, is it the same person? Is the power is given back after this? Can we say that the power was given back to a civil regime or a civil power or to a military? That's the question also. And it's very difficult. But I can't really answer to this question. But the point should be raised. It's very important also. Because that gives the impression that it's very simple to check the power and after drop down the uniform and come as a new civilian and it causes a problem.
Yeah, I've written in my book, I was written in one of the chapters, I was looking at the not necessarily legality, because you know everyone has the right to contest, you know, but I was looking at the ethics of former military rulers or military, you know, converting into democratic rule, if that is ethical, if that is something positive. But if you look at history and look at even what is going to look at in Rwanda, for instance, look at Kagame and look at how people, or look at Zimbabwe, these people start off as maybe anti-colonial or you know, those kind of hero fighting for the country, but they end up in, even in Cameroon, you see the people, they end up entrenching themselves in power. They end up, you know, not wanting, even the Bongo that we talk about, those dynasty, even in Chad with the Debbies, you see them not wanting to leave power and holding on to power. So like Riley condemned, I don't think military rule is the answer. But the question I want to go back, if I move away slightly from this, is, do you think the election, was the election fair, free and fair? Could we say it's free and fair if it's the same person that, do you think it's free and fair winning over 90? Bongo didn't even win. I think Bongo's elections were like 60, in the range of 60%, but this is an overwhelming over 90%. Do you think that What do you think about that?
You are totally right, because I see your position behind the question exactly. And we have the same position. You know, winning election in a democratic context with more than 18%, it appears very, we start doubting. That's why we can say that. How is it possible? How can it be possible that in an election, in a fair election, with four or five candidates, one of the candidates come out with more than 18%? You know, you start doubting. You can ask yourself, is it the expression of the will of the population, or are they using other means to reach to that score? That's a question also. But it should be noted that when there is a competitive election, normally when there is a competitive election, the score at the end of election should be shared between the different candidates. But in the case of Gabon especially, something should be noted and can be justified. I'm not justifying, but we can give a point of understanding of that score of 18%. First of all, how many candidates were part of the election, were in the competition? Five. Between the five candidates, there were four candidates with unknown reputation. Let's say that. The person coming second, Billy Binze, was the former prime minister of Ali Bongo, of PDG. The party of Bongo. That political party in Gabon. So it comes second with 3%. And I think that score was, for me, is very important. It's normally was supposed to have 0%. Normally. Because of the perception of the party and the person, because he was the last prime minister of Ali Bongo, when Alice Bongo was put in down by the military. You know, so his image in the opinion was not good. Regarding the other candidate, there were, let's say, unknown candidate. You know, and now Oligui Nguema, what gave him the importance and the volume we saw? First of all, he organized a very, very huge and important campaign. It was like an American campaign, Donald Trump campaign. You know, was the moment of show, moment of sharing with population, be close to population, that create a sentiment of a president, a normal president, accessible president. That's his first thing. Secondly, during the period of transition, he works a lot with his government, you know, in terms of amelioration, of improving the condition of life of Gabonese. That should be noted. Paying, for example, increase the salary of people, of public servants, make free some basic and need of population, try to regulate price on the market and all those things. Those social measures give him a very important advantage on other candidates. I think it was an election with one candidate only. Other candidates were not there to accompany the process, but I think the election was Olingi Gema between Olingi Gema, and the result
was pretty. So we are in Gabon is about a population of 2.5 million. And it's an oil rich and timber rich country, but there seems to be like about a quarter of that, or more than a quarter of that population, live in poverty. So what do you see? Do you see that with this transition, is there going to be a material change in their livelihood? Do you think this is going to translate, or is it going to be another dashed hope? Hello?
Please, with your question, it's okay.
So the question I was asking is, do you see this electoral victory and this popular hope in Oligui Guema, do you think it's going to translate into a good life for the people, for the 35% of people that live in poverty, or do you think it's going to be a dashed hope?
It should be noted that Gabon is a very rich country. That should be said. And it's very sad to note that, given the importance of natural resources, their people is living total poverty. Very important, very range of populations living in poverty. That's very sad to be noted. I think the hope is that, there should be a fair repartition of that, riches, to make people to improve the level of life or the quality of life of people there. And that's the hope that's the hope people or population put in Oligui Guema when giving him the vote and bringing as a head of state. I think it's a challenge from him. It's a very important challenge. But, you know, when you are a colony, a former colony of a state like France, you know, the perception of power or the way of ruling power is not the same. That should be said. Sometimes various heads of state in this part of the continent are not depending only, or their politics don't lay only on the will of their population or what they want to do. Sometimes the instruction coming from the colonial master. And it's a total shame. Let's say like that, very frank. You know, there's a relationship, an unexpressed relationship between those previous former colony and the colonial master. Based on the different interest defended by the colonial master, especially France. So you can be elected as the head of state in your country with a very good program in a way to improve the quality of life of your population, to take advantage of the rich of the wealth of your country and ameliorate the situation of population. But you know, when that ambition come in conflict with the interest of the colonial master. The situation we are facing in Central Africa in general is no more, we are not surprised. In Central Africa, Gabon is not the only rich country. Cameroon, Equatorial Guinea, and all other countries, Chad especially, there's a lot of wealth here. In those countries, but the problem we question ourselves: what can be justified? How can we justify the fact that a country like that cannot give the basic means, offer the basic means of life. I'm talking about the basic means in terms of water supply, in terms of access to
health, good road, good health, yeah.
Education, in terms of roads, all those things. That's the question. In those countries, what is more important is embezzlement or corruption and all those things. That should be noted. And my fear is that after the joy provided by the transition period and given the good intention, even if Olukingema has a good intention, that also the fact that the colonial master is present, the fact should be taken in consideration. It depends on him and his team to decide to say no. We are now defending population of Gabon. We have been put in there for Gabonese people. Let's save Gabonese people.
Before I answer the last question, I'm glad that you mentioned this. I was going to ask you. So we've seen, obviously, the anti-French sentiment. It's more like the Arab Spring, the African Spring that happened in recent years with French in the Sahel, in Burkina Faso. And you've seen where they've booted French, literally just booted French out of these places. But funny enough, Gabon is also a former French colony.
Yeah.
Did these sentiments, did they play a role in the ousting of Ali Bongo? Did is there any element of that in the Gabon case? This strong sentiment, anti-Western or anti-French sentiment in the Gabon case? Do we see any kind of a parallel similarity?
I think what is calling anti-French sentiment is not really enriched or deep in Central Africa, like in West Africa. And in Gabon, especially, when you are in Gabon, you feel like the impression you have, because I've traveled from that country, the impression there is like you are in a French, I don't know, region or province, let's say like that. So the sentiment is not very deep enriched in a population, you know. Their Francophone people can work very simply. French people are living free there. And it should be noted that before Ali Bongo was put in down, remember the video he did?
Yeah.
Remember the video?
Yeah.
Because it's an indicator of the relationship at that moment between him and the French country and France. Remember, I did the video in English, first of all. In English. It's a lot of sense. It means a lot of sense. Because before that happened, remember that there was a lot of, many journalists, a lot of emission organized to say that Ali Bongo was not elected. There was like a rupture between the Ali Bongo regime and France. So when he did a video in English, it was not like, it was justified, because he knows that there was a problem with the former colony, with the former France. That's why he oriented the video to the England, or especially to the American. So there was, we can maybe assume that there was a link between that, but I think normally the fact that Ali Bongo was putting down is the will of population of Gabon. There was an exasperation. It was the expression of an exasperation, not guiding by the anti-regime or anti-France sentiment on anything. No, no. I don't think that sentiment is very deep in this part of the in this part of Africa, especially in Central Africa, like it is in West Africa.
Okay, that's very interesting. I think we should let's wrap up with this. So, if we look at how we're looking at it, and if we look at unique case studies, and see how the military over the years since many African states have gained independence. Because the military itself, like you and I have had in our correspondence in the past, did not play any particular role in the independence of Africa. the most militaries in Africa were colonial militaries. They were for the benefit, they were fighting for the benefit of the colonial masters rather than fighting for democracy. But surprisingly, they've appeared to be vanguards of restoring democracy, protecting democracy, protecting sovereignty. And we've seen in many of these cases that that is not true. Most of them are there to just entrench power and then even cause more problem. But we've also seen cases like Ghana, and we're seeing with Gabon, with how you've explained that these cases may be like reference points rather than outliers. They could provide some sort of a guidance. Maybe, for instance, we could look at maybe what I wanted to touch on the African Union and touch on the ECOWAS, because ECOWAS threatened and could have escalated the issue with in the Sahel that led to the alliance of the Sahel states. And you look at how African Union and all these regional governments are dealing with this stuff. Do you think there should be? Do you think that this case offers some kind of lessons to sit down and reflect on this? That's number one. Number two, what is the solution? How should people deal? Because usually people do this military push or military guys always exploit the popular discontentment of the people. Maybe that they're discontented and then they come as heroes. So what are other avenues should be available that can offer that outlet rather than military rule? And then lastly, what do you see future of Gabon if you want to be a prophet and Africa as well, and the, you know, other military regimes, you see, what do you see? So let's end on that note.
Yeah. Three questions in one. I will try to be very straight and short. First of all, I think what is going on in those different countries call the attention of African Union. Mm-hmm. It should be noted that those different states are part of the African Union or regional community. See, what we call economic community. So, despite the fact that they adopted a number of legal texts to condemn military putsch, it should be very important to take the importance, to be aware on the importance of people, of the aspiration of people to have a very good life. And take position. Let's say like that, take position against civil power who are not able to offer or to give the minimum basis of well-being to their population. I think that is very important also. That's why for me, the reform of African Union or different community economic, regional economic community are very important. It's a matter. We can't avoid that today, because what's happened? When there is a military putsch, you have the impression that African Union or ECOWAS or ECAS can say something different, can change the position of the military. They are totally weak. They are totally weak in front of that situation. And if you don't pay attention, the basis of those military putsch, as you said, is the exasperation and the bad condition of living of population. Of population, let's say bad governance, let's say like that in one word, bad governance. So it's important also to those regional institutions to promote good governance and help different governments to promote that good governance. It's very important and a fair repartition of wealth of the country. Because what's happened is there is like a caste of people, a number of population, reduced number of population of people, let's say people, reduced number of people who capture all the riches, all the wealth of the country. And that's unfair. I think what's happening, what's going on now in Africa is a lesson. African Union and regional institutions should learn from that is going on and try to adapt in that evolution. Otherwise, we are going to face other military putsch in Africa because it's not just going to end with that happening in Gabon or anywhere. Inside, for example, or in Sudan. or in Guinea, let's say like that. Because countries in which, for example, some country in which civilian power are there and refuse to go is a problem. Look, for example, what's going on in a country like Ivory Coast now. If a situation of military coup appeared, are we right to condemn those people, those military? For example, I'm not calling for a military coup in those kind of countries, you know? For example, in a country like Cameroon, the question should be raised, if there is a military coup in Cameroon, does the African Union or regional community, they have right to condemn what's going on there? Because the modification of the constitution is also an unconstitutional chain of power at the same level as the military putsch. But those modifications happen in those different countries without anything said by those organizations. So lessons should be learned from that's going on in Africa by those institutions. So what is the future? Let's see, what's the future? I'm not a prophet, but my hope is that Gabon should start a new history with Oligui Nguema. What he started in terms of improving the quality of life and minimum basis in good governance, what he started in transitional period should be continued in a normal period and try to improve and trying to give a strong possibility to population to live better and structure the country. That's my wish, because it should be the plantation should be called, and everywhere I went, I just call it in mind people that what's the meaning of politics in terms of basic. Let's call Aristotle is the best way. Politics is a way to improve the quality of life of people. That's all. That should be mentioned. The emphasis should be put on the aim of politics. If ruling the power, you are not able to ameliorate or to improve the quality of life of people, that's no more politics. That's why my hope is in Gabon, they should take lesson from what's happened with the previous regime. Bongo, Fada, Ali Bongo, and take lesson from that happened, for what's happened during those periods, and try to build the future. And I think the legitimacy or the go ahead that Ali Bongo or Oligui Nguema now is like is having a go ahead coming from all the population, and the percentage of the election give that impression. It should take advantage of that legitimacy to try to construct the Gabon, build Gabon by putting the interest of Gabonese first. And secondly, try to build the reputation of a big state, because Gabon has the possibility to be what we call a small Dubai. You know, Gabon is not a very big country, and you say 2.5 people population, the possibility to make Gabon great again. And the opportunity is given to Oligui Nguema to show that that's possible.
That's brilliant. I know there's the third one that I mentioned, but you know, I wanted to say, is there any other outlet where people can express that discontentment without relying on the military interference?
Yeah. Sorry, I forgot that. You know, it's very difficult. I think the main way, by agreeing on the devolution of power through election, I think it's the only way through which the population can express their opinion, good opinion or bad opinion against the ruling power. Looking for another way is maybe going to the street and demonstrate, or a revolution. But the problem with the revolution is, it's not the revolution itself. It's what's happened after the revolution. Because if the revolution is captured by the same people ruling the country, if the revolution is captured by people having the mindset with what was condemned by the population, is a problem, you know. So there's the way of election, which is the normal way, but there's also a way of revolution. But the problem with the revolution is what's happening after the revolution. How are we going to make sure that the evolution, the revolution provide the deep change, the total change people expect? That's the question. So I don't really know if there's another way, because I can't support the possibility of population to take arm, you know, to take arm against the regime. No, but I think the means we organize in constitutionalism is election. And the second way is revolution. But with revolution, we need to control what's happened and make sure that what would come after the revolution is the reflect of the will of the population.
Well, Steve, thank you very much. This has been an amazing discussion. I really, really enjoyed this conversation. And you and I agree on most of these things. And yes, there needs to be, like Raleigh said, a change in attitude, a change among the African Union, and then the different regional economic communities and the way we deal with it. There should be an equal amount of condemnation for poor civilian governments that are not meeting to the needs of the people, the same way we condemn Porsche. And this needs to be like even across board. And yes, we can only hope for the future of Gabon and pray that this will not be like the norm where the military comes in and then things worsen. But anyways, thank you very much for taking out your time from your training to come talk to me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Michael. It was a very, very important. I enjoyed the moment discussion. I want just to apologize for some mistakes that happened when speaking English, but I think the most important.
You did absolutely well. You did. There's nothing to call. There's no complaint. You did absolutely well.
Thank you so much. And thank you for calling me. I'm always going to be first. Thank you so much.
Brilliant. Yeah, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Have a nice day. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, bye. Thank you once again for tuning in for this week's episode. As a tradition, join me to thank our guest, Dr. Steve Tametong, for his insightful analysis and critical commentary on the Gabon transition to Gabon military coup and its transition to democracy. For now, stay blessed, and I'll see you next week.